Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Try Alive. And I am joined today by our co-host. Her name is Casey Randall, calling in from Anchorage, Alaska. Casey, how is it going?
It's going well, and I know we didn't have a show last week, and I missed it. So I'm excited to be back and talk with you today, Robert, and our guests too.
I am looking forward to it as well. You know, it is a very snowy morning here up in Willow. Winter is in full bloom. I know it's supposed to warm up, and we're going to have a couple of guests on today that do something a little bit different than I'm sure a lot of folks know about, especially listening to us outside of Alaska. Is that right?
Well, yeah, and I mean, our guests are going to be able to tell us, but I think this is a pretty uniquely Alaskan race. I don't know how many other races even compare to what they do here. So, yeah, we're excited. We have Nick Petito today and Jared Vaughn, and they are both Iron Dog racers, and they're going to be able to tell us all about that. Do you have a question to start, or do you want me to dive in, Robert?
Well, first off, let's have the guys introduce themselves. Let's have Nick go first. Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you're all about.
Yep, my name's Nick Petito. I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska. Been racing and riding since I was a little kid, and this will be my first year racing.
All right, and Jared?
Yeah, I'm Jared Vaughn. I was an Army brat, so I grew up all over the place. Came to Alaska in the 90s and started racing snow machines in the early 2000s, and this will be my fifth Iron Dog, and really looking forward to another year.
Excellent, for sure. So, Casey, I'll go ahead and start off. Of course, I'm sure a lot of folks are wondering what in the world the Iron Dog is, especially for folks that are listening overseas in Europe and whatnot. Nick or Jared, whichever, please tell us what the Iron Dog is. How far is it? How fast is it? It's an awesome event, and I've only seen it on television.
Okay, yeah, this is Jared. I'll take that one for now. Nick, jump in whenever he wants to. The Iron Dog is a 2,000-mile snowmobile race that goes from Big Lake to Nome. That's about 1,100 miles. And then from Nome, it goes over to Fairbanks, which is another 900 miles. So we got about 2,000 miles altogether. We'll see speeds up to 100 miles per hour on the Yukon, and we'll go through all kind of different conditions, dirt, water, snow, you name it, we're gonna run over it.
Wow. And how fast is a typical run on that 2,000-mile trip?
I think the guys last year who won it did it in, 35, 36 hours. But they have a stage, different checkpoints, different layovers, so it takes a week to do the race, but actual trail time will be anywhere from 35 hours to you'll have teams that are pushing 60 hours to finish.
Wow. So, Casey, before you jump in, do you have any idea that perspective? What is that, from New York City to Miami and back in 35 hours?
Hey, are you asking me?
Casey, are you there? Yes.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. I mean, I know looking at a map of Alaska and what they do, but no, that's a long ways, and that would cover a lot of states if you're looking at the lower 48, right?
I totally agree. So what question do you have for the guys?
Well, I have kind of a funny question because I just heard Jared say the word snowmobile. And, you know, I've been in Alaska 17 years now. When I came up from Michigan, in Michigan, we called them snowmobiles. And then I moved to Alaska, and I learned very quickly that people say snow machine up here. So set the record straight. What does the Iron Dog call the machine that you guys drive so fast?
This is Nick. They call them sleds most of the time.
This is Jared. I used snowmobile because I knew our audience was going to be broad all over the place. So, yeah, we usually say
Excellent.
Snow machines, sleds, or, you know, something along those lines. Alaskans generally don't use the term snowmobile.
Right.
I mean,
so
when
guys,
I hear ski-doo, everything, right?
So, guys, tell us a little bit about your machines. They're not your typical you know, finding the backyard, toot around the trails machines, are they? These are high powered, ready to rock and roll snow machines, aren't they?
Yeah, this is Jared. These are 2017 Polaris 600 Access Pro S snow machines. We get them from the factories pretty much bone stock, and then we put a lot of extra pieces and parts on them. We brace things. We put bags on them, mount GPS lights or GPSs. We mount extra lights. So when they're all finished, they're definitely not the stock sled you're going to go to your local dealership and pick up.
If I could follow up with that just a little bit, Casey, are you guys required similar to NASCAR, where everybody sort of has the same setup in terms of engine size? I don't know a whole lot. I'm a musher, so I don't know a lot about snow machines myself. But are they pretty much standard across the board in terms of the team setup?
Yes, they're all 600 is the max displacement you can have on the race. So everybody's running a 600. You'll have Skidoos, Polarises, and Arctic Cats. No Yamahas this year. But, yeah, they're all 600s. It makes it even across the board. And you can't do any engine modifications or exhaust modifications. You can. It's basically a stock sled, stock motor, with a bunch of added parts to make them last 2,000 miles of rugged terrain.
Excellent.
You know,
Casey, the next question? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're going to say something? Go ahead.
Well, this is Nick. What I was going to say is another one of the hard parts about it is the sleds are made different every couple years, and this race happens every year. But we get the new sleds the consumer gets, but usually the hard part is the rules are pretty strict on the motor and stuff like that, but bracing is pretty much open. So one of the strategies for the teams is to have the sleds braced up properly. And with the sleds changing so constantly, we have very little time to pack, you know, a couple thousand miles on them before the race. We have to figure out all the weak points, and then we fix those. And there's a lot of racers, if you follow the race, that'll have failures on the sleds that other teams already knew about, and they'll have them braced up ahead of time.
Right, right. Casey?
Well, I know there's so much that goes into this, but just to kind of give us and everyone who's listening, I mean, what is it like, you guys? I mean, can you just give us a little bit of what you go through when you're racing down, you know, you said 100 miles per hour on the Yukon River? Most people are never going to understand or experience that. I mean, what are some of the things you go through on the trail when you're doing this race?
Well, this is Jared. You face just about everything. In 2014, I believe it was, or it was 15, 2015, there was 7 miles of ocean water skipping that we went across. Same year, there was the no snow through the Farewell Burn. It was 70 miles of bare dirt. Probably took 5 hours to go 70 miles. 2013 on the Yukon River, it was 50 below zero, and you know, you're going 94 miles per hour, so you got about a 120 degree below zero wind chill. So
wow.
You got ice ledges and pressure ridges on the rivers. You got trails that locals are using at the same time, so you're trying to avoid people on the river and on the trails. Yeah, just all kind of different variables out there you got to watch out for and think about ahead of time when you're making all your race preparations.
So people listening might be thinking, these guys are crazy. I mean, why would you go do that? But I know that you love doing this. And I did read on your bio, you both talked about your families and thanking your wives and all the people that support you. But I read on Jared's where he said, I promised my wife I was only going to do this race one time. And obviously you've done it many more. But so what is it that you guys love about it?
It's a passion. You get involved with something in a community like Iron Dog, and it's really hard to quit. There's the camaraderie is there, but you know, the next guy racing would do anything to help you out along the trail if you were in a bind. So it's just a really good community to be involved with, and the guys and the people who run it, you know, couldn't be better people.
Who was that? Was that Jared speaking there?
That was Jared, yes.
That was,
Nick, what's your reason behind it?
100% the challenge and the bragging rights.
There you go. There you go for sure. All right, guys. So my next question is, why the team setup? Is it a safety thing? What's the deal with having teams of two? Do you guys have to run together exclusively? Can one member finish 100 miles in front of the other? What's the lowdown on that?
You want to take that, Nick?
Yeah, it's mainly a safety issue. There's a lot of rivers like Kuskokwim, the Yukon, even the Yentna, the Big Sioux. You know, when you go underwater, you know, you need somebody to help you get out. And especially we carry dry gear. So if somebody gets wet, the other person has their gear in their sled, so it's dry. There's some predicaments where you're in the middle of nowhere where if you get buried into a bad spot, there's no way one person's going to get the sled out. So a lot of it's a safety aspect. The other part is the rule – they spread out. We don't always ride right next to each other. I mean, we can sometimes have up to a mile distance between us, but that's on points where we know that the other rider will wait for you as you get up. You know, especially with how many hours and how many miles you're going, you get fatigued, you start making bad decisions. You know, that's where your partner steps in and straightens you out, or vice versa. You know, you kind of help each other keep going. I wouldn't imagine trying to run it by yourself. That would be a lot. I think it would be too much to take on.
Jared, do you have anything to add to that?
Nick pretty much nailed it there. The Iron Dog, the one of the rules they do have is you have to leave a checkpoint with your partner. So even if you get to Squint enough 5 minutes before the next guy, you can't leave until your partner gets there. So it's good to find somebody who's about your same riding style, about your same riding speed. That way one guy is not 10, 15 miles ahead of the next guy.
And do you guys have to finish relatively together? I mean, can you guys have a little bit of distance between you, or do you have to cross the line at the same time?
You can cross the line pretty much at the same time is what's typical. And, you know, by the time you get up into the Fairbanks area for the finish, you're fairly fatigued. So you're riding together. There's not a lot of separation between most of the teams at that point.
Right, right. Casey,
you,
next
you
question.
You can finish. Oh, okay. No, I was just going to follow up with that. You could finish separate if two teams, like if one person came in, it finishes when the second part of the team comes in. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, your time stops when the second guy gets there.
Okay. Okay, right. And I think we already said that it starts in Big Lake and ends in Fairbanks, right, after going out to Nome. But now when you're riding, and I know you guys talked about sometimes you're not together, you may have a mile, you know, that separate you, but as far as being alone on the trail, I mean, are you typically just cruising along by yourself, or, I mean, what kind of assistance, what kind of things do you see out there? What kind of help do you get? That's a bunch of jumbled questions, but go with it.
As far as help, each checkpoint has gas, oil, and, water. So we fill up at every checkpoint, get a little bit of water in us, and we keep going. So in between the checkpoints, per the rules, you're not allowed to have any outside help. You can have another pro race team help you if they stop. But other than that, there's no outside help. We do have air support, so we have a pilot and an airplane with all of extra pieces and parts in it, so that if we do have an issue, we can have them meet us at the next checkpoint and get parts from them.
My next question, guys, is in kind of a comparison to Iditarod, speaking as a musher. I love to see how it's progressed over the years, you know, starting in the 70s where they were running it in like 3 weeks, and now they're doing it in 8 or 9 days or so. When did the Iron Dog start, and do you guys know how fast they were going back in the early days compared to now?
It started in 1984. It was basically a bunch of riders. They got together, and it wasn't really a full-out sanctioned event, the first one. They just – a couple guys crazy enough to do it. Back then, it was a huge spread of time. They used to go to Nome and back to Big Lake, and that's actually the hardest stretch. So that was a pretty crazy race. But back then, they were lucky to get the flood to Nome, period. There was massive mechanical failures.
And do you remember how long it took back in the day? Was it, 4 or 5 days versus a day and a half?
I couldn't tell you. I'm only 21. I was or 29. I was born in 87, so that was before I was even born.
Excellent. We'll have to check that out, Casey, and put it on the site here. Casey, what's your next question?
Well, I was just wondering how the heck you guys train for this. I mean, we have a lot of snow and ice, right, for all these winter months, but we don't have that year round. And is this something you guys, when you commit to this, is this like your whole year? You spend a few months? I mean, tell us about your preparations.
This is Jared. Typically, we'll start doing some workouts in August, September. Start some cardio, start some upper body workouts, and just kind of get your body conditioned for, just physical activity. And then as soon as the ice starts or the water starts freezing up and we got ice and snow, the best way to get yourself conditioned is just getting on the sled and getting seat time. So we try to get anywhere from 1,800 to 2,500 miles on a practice sled before we even ride our race sleds. And that's the ultimate way to get yourself conditioned, is just get on the sled and ride it around.
Right.
Right. Well, because I know your body gets, I just want to say, Robert, when I'm riding a sled, I mean, I'm sure you on the back of a dog sled too, Robert, I mean, your body gets jostled around when you're riding a snow machine. I mean, you really have to be conditioned to be able to stay in that position for as long as you guys do. That takes a lot of muscles.
It's a lot of fatigue on your body, that's for sure.
Right. So, guys, my next question is sort of related to what you guys do in the off time. You know, everybody has a job, of course, in order to fuel these passions. What do you do, Nick, and what do you do, Jared, to sort of keep the family happy and to be able to pay the bills when you're not doing this?
All I do is work and the family and ride the snow machine, so there's a strike balance. Usually just go off the look on the wife's face if you can go riding that day or not. Other than that,
I hear you there for sure.
I mean, you just do your best. You can't win at everything either. You got to stay up at work, but work takes a hit. If you do too much work, you don't get enough riding, and if you do too much riding and work, you don't get enough family. So it's kind of like
right.
Jared told me before, when you start the race, you kind of put everything on pause for the most part. And then once it's all over, you make up for lost time.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's the way to do it.
Casey?
Well, yeah. And I know you guys, you both have wives and children. And I mean, how do they become a part of it? I see them, there's an expo coming up. I know you have your kids there. You have so many people cheering for you. How does your family become a part of it, and how?
This is Jared. That's a very good question. It's very important to keep your family engaged with your progress along the building your sleds, building your practice sled, building your race sled. You don't want to exile yourself to the garage and never see your kids and your wife. That's for sure. So there's, like Nick said, there's a fine line. You gotta carve out the time and make sure you still have family time mixed in with wrench time. Just about any pro racer who's prepping for the Iron Dog will tell you the same thing, who's married or has kids, that you gotta still make the time to make them happy. And then as soon as Iron Dog's over, you just forget about your sleds, forget about the race, and just concentrate on hanging out with them for as much as possible.
Right. Nick, do you want to add to that?
I don't know. The wives get, both of our wives are pretty involved. I mean, if you talk to, like Jared was saying, you talk to his wife, she knows what's going on with what races, what issues we've been having. My wife, same thing. As for actual involvement, a lot of finances, a very large amount of finances, and a lot of time involved. So they get just as involved as us, even though we're not working on the sleds, And at the same time, you talk about involvement. When I'm not there and I'm working on the sled, she's pretty much a single mom the whole time she's doing it. So she's by far involved. And, up here in Alaska, Iron Dog and the names and stuff, I can name Iron Doggers all the way back from the 90s. It's kind of a Super Bowl for us, so there's a lot of family pride
and how you do and finish, you know. I couldn't tell you when it's
right.
actual race time. Everybody in the families, including our immediate family, far family, even just friends, you know, you're tracking on the GPS and you're hitting refresh every 2 minutes just to see what little information comes out, you know. Everybody's glued to it.
Right. So, guys, my next question is sort of the elephant in the room in regards to climate change here in Alaska. We see pictures every year of you guys out on the trail before the race. I know that one of the teams just posted some pictures, I believe it was Friday or Saturday, of it looked like, you know, a typical summer trail with the exception of having an iced-over lake out there. How are you guys dealing with that, you know, in mushing? It is something that's we're always thinking about, the lack of snow and, you know, the ability to get out there and train and work. How are you guys dealing with that you know, Mother Nature is sort of changing as we go along?
This is Jared. The last few years of preparation, you know, we always get those scare tactics right before the race of there's no snow or everything's wide open water. What we've done in the past is remodified our cooling systems to try to keep our sleds as cool as possible for as long as possible, especially through places like the Farewell Burn. Can't really control open water. You just got to prepare for it, that kind of stuff mentally. But I think the picture you're referring to was this little scare tactic from one of the other teams. I've got air reports from a different pilot who said that was about a 100-yard stretch of dirt, and the rest of it is full of snow. So, yeah, this year I'm not overly concerned about it. I've heard lots of good trail reports so far.
But do you see sort of a change in the future, though, Jared? You know, obviously we're getting – this year is much different than years past. I think this year is the best snow we've had since about 2010 or 11. Do you see it sort of changing on the way, you know, less snow coming later, leaving earlier, et cetera?
You've definitely noticed a snow change. But I think a lot of it has to do with just the way the weather falls that year. You know, some years there's a ton of snow through the burn and through the coast, and then other years it's bare. I really haven't seen a good pattern yet to put my finger on it, but all we can do is hope that Mother Nature cooperates each year and we get some decent snow for Iditarod and Iron Dog and all the fun winter sports.
I agree with you there. So, Casey, we have about 7 minutes left, maybe a couple of more questions each. Do you want to mention something about the Be Alive message? I understand that these guys carry that on the trail. Is that right?
That's right, and that was perfect timing because that's exactly what I wanted to say next. I want to thank Nick and Jared for promoting the Be Alive message, for spreading that goodness, you know, to inspire people to get out there. Jared's had the Be Alive sticker. I think this is like the third year, isn't it, Jared, that you've had it on your sled?
I think this is number three.
Yeah, and it's awesome because, you know, the more people who are just seeing that and spreading that, we're inspiring people. And they're going to have an expo soon here coming up at Cabela's. I think, is it this week that you guys are going to do that?
It's Wednesday, what is that, the 15th, and it is from 1 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Cabela's
okay,
and Anchorage.
Okay, at Cabela's. Okay, and that's a place where all the teams are there and all their sleds are there, and people can walk around Cabela's. They can shop if they want, which is great, but you can meet the riders. You can see their sleds. And I need to get you guys some Be Alive stickers in case anybody who stops by your place where you're set up, they can grab a free sticker if they want. But I know we've talked about it before, Jared, on, you know, gosh, it makes you feel alive when you're out there riding. But, you know, how do you promote that message? I mean, would you want your kids to do this? What would you tell people about, you know, why does this make you feel alive when you do it?
I think I would let my kids do this, not for a lot more years, but yeah, eventually they definitely could. But as far as promoting the Be Alive, I mean, the message that Casey has promoted with this organization couldn't be a better one. So I know how I feel, and I think Nick feels the same way, that we couldn't be happier to get more people exposed to what Casey and Be Alive is doing and helping others in the community and others going through things like she went through. And it's just a good thing to be involved with, and it's good to spread that kind of a message around the community. And
excellent.
Well,
I believe
so
Nick
much.
Had to catch a phone call. Is that right, Nick? Are you on?
Yep.
Okay. We were talking about the Be Alive message how you guys are sort of sharing that on the trail. What is your thoughts on that? How are you living that passion, by just getting out there and taking charge?
Yeah, they go hand in hand. Just like in life, you get dealt a hand of cards, you deal with it. It's just like on the race. You don't know if you're going to break something, you have a physical issue. It doesn't matter what it is, though. You find a way to overcome it. I mean, that's just like life. Everybody has struggles, you know, a lot of people more than others, but it doesn't mean you quit. And that's kind of the Be Alive thing. I mean, do you just stop and give up, or do you keep going?
Right. Right, for sure. All right, guys, we have time for one more question. I guess it's more of a statement more than anything. I'm sure you got a lot of people to thank. I'm sure you got some wonderful sponsors out there that help you guys out. Anybody you want to give a shout-out to here on the show and make their contributions known? That's an important part of this, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll take a
I'll
couple.
I'll take that.
All right. Yeah, our big sponsor this year is Denali Dental. They came through big time for us. I'd also like to thank Vision X Lighting, Eagle River Polaris, Arctic Cat, Polaris Industries. They did us pretty good on our sleds this year. We got Vision Source Adventures in Eye Care. We got H&K Sheet Metal, Big Dipper Clothing, Rally Automotive. Nick, who else am I missing?
Yeah, we got Northern Petroleum Products, Sports and Spinal Injury Clinic. Looks like Woody's Traction Products has helped us out.
And Motor Fist, they hooked us up with some good gear this year, so that's important on the trail, too, to be warm and dry.
Excellent. Well, you guys sound like you have a lot of support out there. I'm looking forward to following along. How can folks sort of take part in the race? Of course, up here in Alaska, there's quite a bit of coverage on the local news channels with updates throughout the day and that sort of thing. Do you guys have a tracker system like they do on Iditarod where people can follow along on the website or something?
Yes, if you go to irondog.org, they do have race tracking for all the pro teams. Each one of us will have a GPS tracker. And then we also have a Facebook page. If you search Iron Dog Team Petito /Vaughn, we'll have information posted there by our wives for the entire race. And then there'll probably be a link to one of our personal trackers as well.
Excellent. We'll make sure we put that on this show page, Casey, so we can have all of our listeners follow along. I know it's difficult, guys, having so many people on the phone at one time, and we jumble up sometimes, but I really appreciate you guys being on, and I wish you all the best out on the trail. Good luck to you. Be safe, and go get them. I hope you do very well. Casey, any closing remarks before we go?
Yeah, just good luck. We're going to be following you. They are Team 5, and if you're local, come out and see them at Cabela's this Wednesday, the 15th, and, you know, be safe, be alive. Thank you, guys. You're awesome.
Thanks for
awesome.
Having us. Really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Yep, thanks
thank
for having
you, Nick.
Us on.
Thank you, Jared. Yep, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.